because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for this compassion never fails. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him.
If I said to you, what's your favorite book? What would you say? Not just what would you say, will you say it? What's your favorite book? Lessons in Chemistry, okay. Sorry? The Gruffalo, good choice. Colossians, okay, we'll come back to that, Dave. Favorite book other than the Bible, that's what I'm thinking of at the moment. Should have made that clear. Sorry? Secret Diary of Adrian Mole. Tale of Two Cities.
No, the gods are not to blame.
Say again?
The gods are not to blame.
The gods are not to blame? Well, I don't think I know that one. Sounds good. Okay, so but it's a difficult question, isn't it, sometimes, saying what's your favourite something? I hate that question, so it's unfair to me to ask you, because you kind of think, but I can't think of everything, so I don't know what to put at the top of the list, and whatever. Okay, but Dave anticipated my next question. What's your favourite book of the Bible? Mark, did you say?
Acts.
Colossians.
Psalms.
Job. I had a lecturer at college once who said that her favourite book was always the one, favourite book of the Bible was always the one she was working in at the time. And maybe that's kind of true of our books generally. Our favourite book is the one we're enjoying reading at the moment. But I'm not surprised that nobody said, Lamentations is my favourite book of the Bible. It's not a great name, is it, for starters? You know, why would you go to a book called Lamentations? It's very small and easy to miss. It's tucked in there in the Old Testament between the mighty prophets of Jeremiah and Ezekiel. It's not a story. It's not a story we can get like Jonah or Esther or Ruth in the Old Testament. It's not got a lot going for it, maybe. But I hope that today we can find some value in Lamentations. We had that portion read from the middle of Lamentations, but I think, you know, let's have a look at it as a whole. It's one of those writings that we believe God has given us in the Bible, which can help us to live in God's world, in God's way, even if it takes a little bit of work. The book of Lamentations arises from a place of loss. If you want to have a, it might be helpful if you're going to have it in front of you as we have a look. It's, so in the Church Bibles, it begins on page 823. As I tucked in just after Jeremiah, which goes on for pages and pages and pages, and then you might miss it before Ezekiel. But there it is. And it's a place of loss. Its opening line is, how deserted lies the city, once so full of people. You can hear the emotion in that opening line. And it's likely that the five poems, which make up the five chapters of Lamentations, weep over, indeed lament, the loss of the city of Jerusalem, which was the capital city for the Israelites in the Old Testament, the loss of that city to invading forces. But whatever it is, it's clear that the poet or the poets are dealing with a devastating loss. But as we've heard, the book has in the middle of the middle chapter this famous declaration of hope, which you might know in the old version as the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. In the version in the NIV which we have, it says, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for or hope in him. Wait for and hope are very closely related, and some versions translate it one way or the other. So if you've got it there, you can see, as we've said, there are five chapters. I think it's helpful to understand a little bit about how it works. They're actually acrostic poems in the original language, in the original Hebrew. So you can see the verse, chapters 1 and 2 both have 22 verses, because there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, and they begin sequentially with the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, which I'm not scholarly enough to tell you, but they do. Chapter 3, the third chapter, the middle of the book, kind of soups this up. And he gets ever so excited, and he has 3 verses for each letter. So if you can see, you've got 22 groups of 3. And in each group of 3, each line begins with the letter. So it's like the first verse begins with 3 lines, all beginning with A. And then the second group of 3 is 3 lines, all beginning with B. And someone has actually done an English version in an acrostic. So we get to that middle bit. And I'm not sure how kind of poetic it comes across as, but that verses 22 that we've been starting with, this version translates with the letter H. How the enduring love of the Lord never ceases. How his mercies never come to an end. How new they are every morning. How great is your faithfulness. Hope I have in him, says my soul, for the Lord is my portion. Do you get the idea? It's that repeated letter. And then chapter 4 goes back to one verse per letter. Chapter 5 has still got 22 verses, but actually the structure is breaking down. And you can almost feel the poet sort of falling apart. The acrostic structure breaks down. It feels like the poet breaks down. And it ends, if you look right at the end of chapter 5, it seems like there's an utter note of despair, which we will come back to. But in the midst of the writer's poetic reflection about this disaster which has come upon the people of God, he calls to mind that declaration about the steadfast love of the Lord, because of which we are not consumed, and it gives him hope. And then he continues describing hope in a God who is good, and needing to wait quietly or hope. He expresses confidence that the Lord will not reject forever, and the Lord does not willingly afflict or grieve anyone. But as we've started to see, it's considerably more complicated than that. It's been a long-standing view that that declaration in the middle stands as the monumental centre of the book, as one writer puts it. But I think this view is challenged as we see through the book. That voice of hope is eclipsed by other voices. It trails off at the end. And the whole structure breaks down. There is no swift resolution, is there? It's not simple to say, okay, all things going wrong, but it's okay because I've got this declaration in the middle. There's this enormous sense of abandonment and injustice. I wonder what your experience of loss has been. If I say to you, I lost my father in November 2018, that's when he died. But in many ways, I lost my father in the months and years before that, as he succumbed to dementia. And I was thinking the other day, in some ways, I found him again since, as I've been sort of more free to remember how he was before he was ill. So it's not simple, I think, loss. What else can loss mean? A friend of ours at university became ill with ME 35 years ago while we were at university. And she's had ME ever since. And she's written about loss. Not just loss of things she had, but loss of what she never had, what she might have expected to have. A husband, children, a career, making music. She was a brilliant violinist. And she's written of the sometimes crushing disappointment of that experience of losing what she would confidently have expected to have. So loss can be the result of negative experiences, but I wonder too if it can be an unintended result of positive choices. Jane, my wife, and I chose to become foster carers, and we don't regret that choice, but we sometimes reflect on how different our lives are from some of our peers, Some of our peers whose birth children have grown up, left home, empty nest, free to pop off to Prague for a weekend. We don't mind, really. But so that's an aspect of the choice we've made. Because every choice to do something involves a choice not to do something else. And those can sometimes feel like losses. What does loss mean for you? Something that is close to our hearts, as I say, is the experience of children in care. And the experience of many, if not all, children who are in care, in the care of the local authority, is loss. Loss of connection with birth family, obviously, but also many other things. Children, young people who might move from one home to another, lose contact with people who share their memories of early life. They might lose contact with that special teacher at school, the neighbourhood children they played with, or special belongings or places that were part of their lives. And our experience is that caring for such children is in some ways all about hope, which is also there in Lamentations. Hope grounded in something better now, with the prospect of something a better future outcome than could have been expected. That's the hope, anyway, of the system. In the Book of Lamentations, as we said, hope does not triumph. We could say it's merely one point of view. There are passages that express trauma, rage, hope, tired dismay. None of these kind of dominates or silences the others. But there are multiple speakers trying to find expression. Isn't that true of our experience of loss? Trauma, rage, tired dismay. Common attitudes among children in foster care. However traumatic a child's birth family has been, being taken into care is another trauma. Sometimes this leads to rage. You're not my mum, you're not my dad. This isn't my home. Sometimes it leads to tired dismay. Why do I have to live here? Why can't I live with mummy? Why do I have to live at all? Sometimes in the midst of it all, there's some hope. Maybe when a child recognizes how their life has changed, they have opportunities they did not have before. But even this can be a mixed emotion, if in the mix of that, there's a criticism of their birth family. In the midst of his loss, the poet of Lamentations calls God's great and steadfast love to mind, and it gives him hope. He is aware that ultimately, God is not a God of wrath, but of mercy. And the voice of hope is one among many, and in danger of being overwhelmed. But I think this is the key. Not only is the Lord ultimately a God of mercy, but the poet knows that. The poet is aware of that. And those two things coming together. But what about that strange ending? The very last verses of chapter 5 are these. You, Lord, reign forever. Your throne endures from generation to generation. He's coming to a good end. Why do you always forget us? Why do you forsake us so long? Restore us to yourself, Lord, that we may return. Renew our days as of old. Unless you have utterly rejected us and are angry with us beyond measure. And that's the end. And we think, this is the Bible. Where's the good ending? But that's where he finishes. Unless you have utterly rejected us and are angry with us beyond measure. It's much discussed, you won't be surprised to know, this ending. And one writer identifies 7 options for translating that verse before observing with great scholarly understatement. It's probably right to understand the ending of Lamentations as less than positive. And yet, as I've thought about it, I think the end of the book doesn't feel like the end of the matter. It asks a question of God, seeking an answer. I can see several parallels with the experience of a child in care. Maybe you can see parallels with your experience of loss. Firstly, there's that low self-worth in the poet's belief that he should be utterly rejected and deserves anger beyond measure. And sometimes we see that reflected in our children. Secondly, there is that hopeful flicker of recognition that God is good and his love is steadfast and everlasting, even though the writer feels undeserving of it. And I think that reflects the hope and the complicated experience of a child in care as they experience, hopefully, consistent love and care from their carers. And there is a reality, isn't there, and a desire to connect with that steadfast love through all the self-sabotage that is expressed in those closing words. They hang in the air. Almost as I read those closing words, it's almost like there's a raised eyebrow. You know, unless you've utterly rejected us? Have you? Are you angry with us beyond measure? They hang in the air. There's that question, which is inviting a response from that faithful source of love and comfort. So I hope you've seen that this book is in the Bible for a reason. I hope we can see that the way it expresses the tension between the beliefs and emotions, it's explored in that poetry of Lamentations, and it reflects the reality of our experiences of loss. So I'm going to pause there. We're going to explore that a little bit more when we've heard our gospel reading in a few minutes. But, just have that open in front of you if you want to, and just reflect on those words and think about how God can meet you in the circumstances of loss.